Hello and welcome to No Big Two Comic Review. I'm Adam Buccafusco. You join with me with Gabriel Dunson.
Hi.
He is a North Carolina-based writer and illustrator who just released his self-published book. And we're going to start talking about everything there is to know about Gabriel Dunson and his work.
I'm interesting.
But first, we got a little sponsor from theheroeshideaway.com. For your comic collectibles and toys and everything you could possibly want under the sun. Well, maybe not. But, you know, a wide variety of comics, toys, movie, memorabilia. Heroeshideaway.com. That's H-E-R-O-S. Hideaway.com. It's singular possessive.
Now, do they have a brick and mortar store?
They do not, but they are on tour, going up and down the East Coast doing cons.
Fantastic! Can you tell us any of the cons that they're doing?
They will be doing a Star Trek convention in New Jersey. They will be doing the Fanboy Expo in Tennessee. Later on in the year, they will be returning to NC Comic Con in Durham.
That's a big one.
That's a big one. And you can always check the website and the events for more. Also, remember, while you're on the website, all the shipping is included in the price.
That's
a big
deal.
So the price you see is the price you pay.
That's so awesome. Like, I usually shop online for comics, and the shipping costs more than the freaking back issue, and that drives me insane.
Right,
so
right.
That's a sweet pricing convention.
Definitely, definitely. So be sure to check it out, heroeshideaway.com. Yeah. All right. So here we are. Thank you for having me over.
Huh? Oh, it's my deepest pleasure. It's like, oh, what, free publicity? Yeah, let's do this. I've got a book to push.
There you go. And as you listeners may or may not know, I recently reviewed his latest book, Purgatory Pub, on No Big Two, the blog. So you can check that out.
He was very, very kind.
I try. At oakcityhustle.com or amb-graphics.com. Anyway, so enough about me and my shit. Tell me you.
But I'm interested in you and your shit.
Well, it's not even my shit. Heroes Hideaway, I have no affiliation with heroeshideaway.com whatsoever.
Oh, hey, any comic shop is good with me, man, online or otherwise. Also, I will be contacting them and seeing if they take independent guys.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, comics, eh? How'd you get into that?
Youngest of five. My older brothers were, like, right in the zone in 89, 90, 91, which, for anybody who's paying attention, that was the big boom of the comic industry. So they were way into comics.
You got Batman, Tim Burton coming out.
Yeah, the Tim Burton Batman came out. The Dark Knight Returns, which was a huge graphic novel.
Frank Miller, yep.
Which both elevated and destroyed Batman at the same time. We can talk about that for an hour and a half later.
I call it the catcher in the rye for comic fans.
Yeah,
it's the must read.
Watchmen had come out in 86. And now the big thing that happened in 90, 91, Marvel trading cards were a big deal.
Right.
Like, they were... they had usurped baseball cards as a collectible, which sadly only lasted for 2 years. But also, you had guys like Jim Lee, Todd McFarlane, Rob Liefeld, and Mark Silvestri, and two more guys, I can't remember their names. Those guys were cranking out A material, best work ever. Todd McFarlane was reinventing Spider-Man, some people say for better, some say for worse. And then they split off and started Image Comics, which was revolutionary. Huge,
absolutely.
Huge deal.
Well, and that was the first time we saw things of creator-owned independent or licensed properties.
Yeah, yeah. It's a huge, huge deal. McFarlane wanted to make something he made up into a household name, and he did it in almost overnight. So anyway, my brothers were like right at the age for this, and I was 6 years old, and I wanted to be just like them.
Right.
So yeah, comics.
Spawn the McFarlane action figures. And...
oh man, my brother had those action figures, and it was the dawn of the toy that you're not supposed to play with.
Oh, definitely.
And I did not understand that, and so Danny would leave for college, and I would absolutely be playing with his Spawn. and I would not realize how fragile they were.
I was going to say, they break easy.
Oh, I am very, very exceptionally aware now. See, the trick is, I also knew where my parents hid the super glue, and I knew that my brother Danny wouldn't touch his figures. Ironically, side story, flash forward a good 15 years, my brother Danny is just packing. He's married, he's moving, and he's got this big box of all of his toys. And he's like, Gabe, I don't feel like moving these. You always like these. Do you want them? And I said, oh, yeah, hell yes, I do. And they're in my garage now, like some really obscure limited edition stuff. Like back when Sin City was just a comic, they made a very limited run of Marv. And that
in the chair?
Yeah. No, yeah. It's not Marv in the chair. It's Marv, Marv holding the villain's head in one hand.
Kevin's head.
Kevin's head in one hand, and Gladys is in his other hand, right? And I said to Danny, I was like, you realize a lot of these, and like Danny said, some of these are broken. I don't know how that happened. And I'm like, when you were in college, I'm the one who broke these. He's like, oh, so you played with them? You know what, Gabe? I'm really glad you did that. I feel so stupid that I never let you.
Is that what it's like to have an older brother? I had an older sister, and let me tell you, her toys were not all that great.
I too had an older sister, and no, they're not.
No.
No, no, they're not. I'm youngest of five. Anyway, sure. So yay, that's where I got into comics, and in middle school, that's when most kids stop drawing around middle school, and I didn't stop, and so I knew that I liked doing art stuff. And when I was in high school, 15, 16, that's when web comics really started to hit.
Sure.
It's middle school and high school, and I was very lucky to have a very tech-savvy brother whose computer I would get on. So I was right there when web comics happened, and that was just the big, oh, I can do that.
It opened up the world and made the idea of getting your comic not only seen but appreciated a little more tangible.
Yeah, the idea was like when you look at Jim Lee draw anything, you think this man is a god.
Right.
I can dream that maybe someday I too will find the talisman to make me this good, but I'll never be this good on my own. And reading web comics by some dipshit in community college, it made things much, much more accessible. It'd be like, oh, I don't have to be Jim Lee. Kind of like listening to an indie rock band makes you think, oh, I can be in a rock band. But listening to someone like Rush or like Dream Theater is like, I'll never be that guy.
Right. Just kind of brings it down to earth a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fast forward a little bit. I'm in college, and I'm married, and I've decided that I do want to do comics and illustration for a living. I was pretty sure at that point anyway, and I was lamenting very harsh. It's like, oh man, I can't wait till I'm done with school so I can finally start my life. You can't see it, I'm doing air quotes. Start my life.
Non-visual medium.
Yeah, about that. I draw. Okay. I had one of those days where it's like, I don't want to be the guy who says I'm going to do something or I want to do this. It's like the time has come for me to be the thing that I wanted to be. So I started drawing.
But
I started taking it in earnest at that point. Quit doodling in a sketchbook and making a character design and dreaming. It was like, okay, let's put one panel after the other.
So that's when it like clicked to you that this was more than just something you did in your bedroom, that this was going to be something you do.
Yeah, in high school, I really thought that it was going to be the thing that I did, but I didn't take any real steps. Like I made a comic. It was like 12 pages, which was a big deal in high school.
Yeah, sure.
But I did not draw consistently, and I didn't take it seriously.
Right.
And part of the problem is, like, at that same point in my life, I had discovered drums and drumming and music in general. And I was working very, very hard, and it opened up a lot of doors. So I wasn't sure, do I want to go into the visual arts, or do I want to be a musician?
Right.
And I waffled between those two all through college, because I spent most of my time doing the music stuff.
I find that those two worlds tend to butt heads a little bit in the mind of a 17-year-old. I mean, same with me. Like, I played guitar and had a couple little startup bands. And I remember in senior year of high school, I thought, you know, when you're looking at your college applications and whatnot, and I'm an okay guitarist, but I'm a pretty good illustrator.
Mm.
One of these is going to make me money, and this is where I got to decide which is actually going to do that. And I find that the more people I talk to, the more people I meet, they have similar scenarios. I will say I've never heard anyone say, like, well, it was either, you know, be a comic illustrator or an accountant,
yeah,
you know, or actually in Jim Lee's case, it was illustrator or doctor.
Frank Cho chose between a comic artist or a nurse. The day he graduated nursing school, I met him at a convention. He told me the story. He said he graduated nursing school. His parents took him out to dinner. They were so proud. And he said, Mom, Dad, I'm never, ever going to actually be a nurse. And they both went, what? And he showed them some comics and some pay stubs. And he's like, I can just make a living. Like, I've got steady work. I can afford all of my stuff right now with my comics. And they both calmed down and said, oh, you've got the degree. We don't care. Like, as parents, we've done our job. You've got the degree. And if this shit goes belly up, you'll be a nurse and everything's fine. Yeah. Todd McFarlane actually wanted to be a pro baseball player.
Hence him buying like the $1 million ball or something like
that. Yeah, the Mark McGwire ball.
Yeah.
And he
is that what it was? It was Mark McGwire's like home run.
It was the Mark McGwire ball. And then he dropped like something like half of his personal fortune. He bought it for $1 million. And then Sammy Sosa beat that record, and then it came out that McGwire was juicing. And bunch of stuff. And in comics, everybody thinks of McFarlane as kind of just this horacious douchebag. So everybody at the comic shop was just laughing their ass off. But he was in the minors, and he would draw all day and all night. But he'd draw the whole time he was in the dugout until he got some kind of career-ending injury.
Yeah.
For me, it was never I'm good at this and not good at that. It's like I am shit at both of these things, but I like them a whole lot. And I know that if I work really hard, I can do something with one or the other.
Sure.
I don't have to be Jim Lee. I could be this douchebag whose name I can't remember from this webcomic. No, the two I was really reading at the time were Penny Arcade and PvP. Because at the time, those were the big ones.
They were the big ones, yeah.
The only ones. That's why they're big now.
So then that sent you over to East Carolina, right?
Yeah. Actually, I applied for East Carolina, UNCG, and Savannah College of Art Design. And I was really looking at Savannah. I did UNCG just to hedge my bets, and I figured it was an artsy school.
Sure.
ECU, my sister had gone to. And I had checked them out, and they had a solid music program. They had a solid art program, or so I thought. And and they had a solid English department, just all the stuff that I could possibly want to learn. They taught all of it. And then it turns out that they were way cheaper than the other two.
They are one of the cheapest universities, full-fledged universities in North Carolina. And they really like to remind their students of that, too.
See, I never got reminded. What happened when I got out and I started running into the kids who went to UNC, I'm like, wow, you're not actually capable of too much. Like, I mean, there's exceptions to that, but one of my brothers went to UNC. He came out with his degree in biology, and he said, I don't know anything.
Right.
Why did I do this? Right. And my sister went to ECU, and she came out. She wanted to be a teacher. She came out, and she was a teacher. She knows what she's doing.
Sure.
And I heard that a lot. So I was like, yeah, ECU and Savannah College of Art and Design. And did not have any concept of how much this stuff was. I just knew expensive, air quotes again, expensive. But they had a comics program. Well, they only had three professors, and all three of those guys, like, I remember I toured their school. I didn't have a portfolio, so I showed my sketchbook to one of the professors, air quotes professors, 2003. It was just three guys. And he looked at me and he's like, oh, so you're basically just another fanboy. Yeah, I guess you can come here. And I got accepted.
Well, that's interesting because it's like, well, who would you want to be in that program if not somebody who loves the medium?
It was a 6-hour car ride home, and I was asking myself that same question. I wrote down in my sketchbook, in quotes, just a fanboy, and just spent the whole 6-hour ride trying to understand what that meant. Got home, Googled that guy, Googled the other two professors, and nothing. That book that they sent out, Bristleboard Jungle, that was the only comic those three guys had actually made. And I asked somebody if they had a music program, and they're like, a lot of our students start rock bands. I'm like, that's not what I asked you.
Right.
So killed it. Didn't go there. And then joke's on me because one of my favorite guys to ever draw Spider-Man is Tom Lyle. And he's a professor there now. Well, I say joke's on me, but now in hindsight, I I encourage every student I've ever had to never go to art school. It's like, yeah, take art classes. Don't buy into art school. Don't do it. Take whatever classes you want. See, I did not have a real experience at all. Like, I was disappointed because I'm like, this is all bullshit. What are you doing? And like, it's ironic because I actually had a pretty good experience in art school. Two of the teachers that I learned the most of out of any teacher I've ever had was Kate Lemire and Gunnar Swanson. They were in the graphic design department.
Sure.
And then there's all the other teachers and TAs from foundations. They were, you know, hit or miss. But those two teachers, I learned so much. And I got so much out of their class. And I dropped out of art school, and it was the best decision I've ever made. So, yeah.
Because you studied English.
I did. When I went into college, I thought... I still wasn't sure, do I want to be a professional musician? And like, not, do I want to be a drummer in a rock band and really make it? Yeah.
Right.
More like I was interested in music with a capital M. Like, my favorite drums were heavy metal because they're fast, they're complicated, they're busy. And heavy metal drummers really, really push themselves. What else can I learn? Most popular musical genres, you can trace their roots back to the jazz tradition.
Sure.
Heavy metal cannot. Heavy metal completely circumvents. You can trace heavy metal back to the Baroque tradition, to J.S. Bach and so on. And I can pull out some sheet music and show you how and why. So I really, really wanted to learn music with a capital M. I wanted to get good at all percussion instruments. I wanted to... the big, big thing for me was marching percussion. Because it was so much like heavy metal, so much like progressive metal. Because it's lots and lots of notes. It's all about pushing yourself physically, get your chops where you want to, while also being very musical and adding a lot. And in percussion, there's no set orchestration the way that there is in a symphony.
Right.
Percussion is always treated as like a weird effects thing, and nobody knows how to deal with them. But in a drum line, there is a set orchestration. That is a battery orchestra. And I like keyboard percussion okay, but I was really interested in battery. Meaning like atonal drums, bass drums, toms, drum set, that sort of thing. Whereas keyboard percussion is like xylophone, marimba, like actual tones and notes with chords that sound pretty and can actually get the girls. No, not that. I want to play a thing that's loud and fast and annoying and your neighbors call the cops on you. That's what I wanted to learn. Wasn't sure if I was going to be a professional musician or professional in comics, like trying to make my own comics and make a start. And
right.
I had this beautiful, because I actually love Scott McCloud's stuff, I read all of his books, had this wonderful revelation where comics are literature. Comics are not a visual medium.
Right.
Without the pictures, it's not a comic anymore. The pictures are super important. That does not downplay the importance of the visual aspect. However, the way that you read a comic, the interaction that happens inside of your brain, is you read the images the way that you read the words.
Sure.
So comics are literature. Comics are storytelling. So Aqua Teen Hunger Force is one of my favorite cartoons in the world. It's so stinking funny. But the animation is cheap. There's a handful of people who do it, and they work really, really hard to do it. So I hate to tell those people, you're cheap, but
right.
it is. If you look at the show, it's a cheap show.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an 11-minute show.
It's not made in Korea like the Simpsons have been for the last, you know, 15 years.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's a lot of other comic strips I read online, like if you read now XKCD, or if you read... what did it for me at the time was Toothpaste for Dinner. It's like, these guys are getting a lot of attention, and that mm-hmm. drawing is shit. And XKCD looks like somebody who writes right-handed makes left-handed stick figures. That's what it looks like, but the writing is spot on.
Right.
So it's like the audience interaction is made or broken by the content of the writing, not necessarily the quality of the drawings. However, being what McCloud calls kind of a classicist, like, I want my drawings to be quality. When I got to ECU, I started by double majoring in English and music, and I started taking art classes. And
a little from column A, a little from column B,
a dash of column C.
Here we are.
Yeah, and then add job. Are we going into the college period now?
Sure.
Okay, we are talking all about me. I am special and important.
That's the idea.
Yeah. I when I finished college, I had a degree in English, which is a paradox because it is the most worthless piece of paper you can ever have. The only thing more worthless is an arts degree. No, I take it back. It is the only thing more worthless than an art degree. But I learned so stinking much.
Right.
And the class that I learned the most in was a class on children's literature with this professor, Laura Tedesco. I will never forget this woman. She was just this sweetheart, and it's obvious that she likes kids, and she likes kids lit. And the very first day of class, she's like, if any of you say, why are we tearing this apart? This is just for kids. I get out of the room.
Right.
Because this, like, there is no other form of literature that is agonized over more than this. And then her first lesson was, here's some fairy tales you might remember. These are not for kids. These were originally developed, like, fairy tales were made. They're subversive stories made by court jesters, to entertain and scandalize the nobility.
Right.
And so it was so interesting and amazing. And I took some other writing classes, which were also very, I learned a lot from, but the biggest thing that I learned was, if you want to get good at writing, don't take a writing class. Take a literature class. Take a class where you read something else and you pick it apart. If you want to get better at writing, you just sit down and write your own stuff.
Sure, that makes sense.
And if you need the writing class to give you a deadline, you're not serious and you need to suck it up, do the work, or you need to just accept the fact that you're not serious.
Right.
And it's okay if you flip-flop between those two. The thing that made me do comics was I realized if I was serious, I'd be doing it.
Right.
And so I started doing it because I was just horrified. And I was like, oh, crap, I'm one of those sissies who's not serious. I can't let this stand. So when I'm done, got the degree in English, got a minor in percussion, which got me way more jobs and way more money. Relatively speaking, it's like almost no money. and I got a minor in art. And what I tell people is a minor in graphic design.
Right.
Because that's the department I was going into.
Sure.
I wanted an art degree that would get me a job. And a lot of places a lot of in-house jobs who hire graphic designers say you either need 4 years of professional experience or a degree.
I'm finding it's a little, you need both.
The
job market today, it's just, in fact, having your degree is like having your high school diploma.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
Oh, you got one? That's cute. So there's like the 20 other people you just passed in the hallway.
And they upped the ante,
I see. They did. But then if you have your master's and you're going for like graphic design, it's usually you get the, why do you have your master's? Why'd you waste the time getting your master's?
Yeah.
So,
almost everyone I know who got their master's, when graduation time was rolling around, they all had a panic attack. They're like, I don't actually know anything. Right. I don't know what I want. I don't know. I'm going to stay in school. But you can't go wrong with more education. I'm just going to stay here where it's safe and I know what's going on.
Yeah.
And I will take 4 years for my 2 years of work.
And they do that and they walk out with a master's and 0 years of actual real world experience. Yeah. Thus, there you're at.
Yeah.
So, after college,
yep,
you hit the ground running, or do you take a year to figure out what you're doing? Or
actually, it's a funny story. One of the biggest things, one of the most important things to me in my life is I decided I wanted to teach drumline at the high school level. And I started doing that while I was still in school.
Right.
That's where my minor in percussion came in super handy. I had a minor in percussion. Drumming mentors at the time let me tag along and kind of teach sectionals with his drumline, so I built up that resume. And the reason I bring that up, it seems beside the point now, but the reason I bring that up is because playing drums and marching in a drumline and teaching it is very specifically what made me the person I am today. It's what made me into the person that said, this is what I want, I'm going to do it. Because prior to that, I was just super lazy waiting for life to happen to me.
If anything, it helped you form a structure and a discipline.
Yeah. And
I have a side note.
Yeah.
My brother was in the high school marching band.
Yeah.
And a roommate of mine was a drum major when he was in high school. And he told me, you know, like, oh, I was a drum major in high school. And I was like, I don't know what that means, but great. Fantastic. And then my mom forced me to go to one of my brother's marching competitions. I was like, I don't know, what? Okay.
Yeah.
And, he played trumpet. So I'm watching my brother, and I see the person, you know, kind of conducting everything. And I was like, well, what's that person do? And my mom goes, that's the drum major. And so it, like, all clicked.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, so my old roommate was actually, like, when he said he was the drum major, like, that meant something.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
And so my brother, who really liked the structure of marching band and really liked being part of a whole, now is a full-fledged Marine.
Yeah, you know?
Like, I think, if anything, being in marching band really opened up to him to the idea of, like, he likes structure, he likes control, and he likes being, you know, feeling capable.
Yeah.
So
for me,
you, it was similar. Yeah.
I never marched in high school. I discovered it way too late. So I got to college, and I'm surrounded by people who are, like, the hot shit in their high school and drumming circles around me. So it was just, if I want this, I've got to turn everything else and actually just do the work.
Right.
So what I learned about myself is, A, I'm a slow learner. Like, I'm going to be behind everybody else in the world at the things that I like doing. And, just a lot of maturity comes from making peace with that. Because what, you know, you realize now is there's always going to be somebody better.
Right.
It's just became very obvious to me.
Especially in the art world.
Yeah. It became especially obvious to me, early on, which was lovely. And B, it gave me the discipline to actually say, I have something that I want. This is an achievable goal. And the only way to do it is to put in the practice on my own.
Right.
And then the second thing I learned about myself is that mentally I'm not very strong. I would practice for an hour and a half straight and I would make no progress. But I would practice for 10-minute increments, take super frequent breaks, and my improvement was phenomenal. So just learning that, it's like I'm not very mentally strong. I need to have, and it, all of this translates into the visual aspect. It sounds like we're on this big tangent, but this translates. Like,
oh yeah, it all comes together.
When it came time for art school, like everybody else's, all of my other classmates, by that point where I was a senior, all of my classmates were freshmen. They're all scrambling, they haven't learned this stuff. And I'm like, the work that they gave us isn't that big of a deal. I just need to make sure I can get in a room where I can turn everything else off and just do the work, and it'll be fine. So after college, what happened was I got my degree in English, and I was sticking around because I had been married by that point, actually. When I was a freshman, I met this girl at a party, and she was crazy hot. And I was like, man, I'm so into this chick. She was a senior. She was there with her, who I thought was her boyfriend. She's way out of my league. But it was an eye-opener for me. It's like, that's the kind of chick that I should be looking for. And I get home, and I get a message from her. And so anyway, a couple years later, we're married.
Sounds like a John Hughes movie, right?
Right? Yes. It's super cool.
Pretty in Purple and Gold.
Yeah. something else being in the marching band gave me is lots of school spirits. Yeah. It's like, I wore the uniform, motherfucker. I can still play the fight. I can play the fight song on every single drum.
There you go.
And I still remember all the cadences. Anyway, I got married my junior year. I got married when I was 21, sure. Which is, at the time, I was like, I guess this is kind of young, but now that I'm looking back, I'm like, jeez. best decision of my life. It was fantastic. We've been married for 7 years now. We've been together for 9, almost 10 years.
Right.
And so what was happening was I was getting my degree in English, which is worthless, and I was looking at, I'm going to get a job waiting tables again. And I like, while I was in school, I was taking the maximum hours. I was working 3 jobs. I was, at different times, I was working the help desk. I was working at University Theater as an usher, and I was waiting tables, and I was teaching high school drumline at J.H. Rose for a little while, and then at Little Washington.
Right, right. I remember these places.
Yeah. Small town 1A drumlines, but excellent experience. So wonderful. The kids were great. So I'm either in class, I'm at home doing classwork, or I'm at work. So social life not happening. The only social life I had was my wife, and I'm coming out with a lot of education that's at once very valuable to me, and at the same time completely worthless. And my poor beloved was working as a nurse. Like, she graduated our first year of dating. She got a job straight away. She's this professional. Everything's clipping right along for her. And I'm thinking, I'm going to be a drain on this woman. I need a degree that will get me a job.
Right.
And also, I lacked a lot of graphic design information that you need in order to make comics worth anything.
Sure.
a lot of comic artists are weak because they don't understand all of the mental stuff that you have to learn that graphic design teaches, particularly lettering, and particularly the composition that it takes to make the lettering work.
What kerning is.
Yeah, kerning. Oh, man, that is like, when I first got into design school, I thought this was all esoteric nonsense. Why do I care? Who cares? Helvetica? What?
Right.
What? I don't just eat me. Yeah, typeface? It's called a font, lady.
I'm just going to use Comic Sans, and we're going to go from there.
Yeah, seriously.
It has the word comic in it, right?
Right? No. Well, for the record, I had discovered Blambot.com, and I'm like, I'm going to use Smack Attack because that font is the shit. And for the record, it's still my go-to font. It's amazing.
There you go.
And it's free, Blambot.com. So I decided I'm going to stay in school. I'm going to get a degree in graphic design. And the long-term plan was I'm going to make comics. I'm going to try to make my living self-publishing, play the long game. And we both wanted kids. We both knew it when we were getting married. We wanted to have kids. And said when kids happen, I'll be the stay-at-home dad.
Right.
So I'm in year two towards graphic design. I just spoke to my, and I'm taking the maximum classes so I can get the hell through this program. I was hoping to get through it in 3 years. Excuse me. And I was taking these classes at the same time I'm taking English. And my absolute worthless, couldn't remember my name in 3 years, academic advisor in the art school, didn't let me know until the last minute that, oh man, you are taking a lot of hours for no reason. It's going to take you 2 years no matter what you do. And I was just beside myself with rage. I wanted to be done with school. I wanted to be out of there. But I didn't want to just quit school and get no job because I didn't think that'd be fair to my wife.
Right.
We talked about maybe, possibly, starting a family soon. And 30 days later, she was pregnant. And what happened was...
life will... find a way.
Oh man, when I was a senior in high school, my dad kept talking about you need something that you can do that supports a family, and I'm like, Dad, I am a teenager. Do I really need to worry about this right now?
Right.
Yes, I did. Yes, the hell I did. I'm 24. My wife tells me she's pregnant. I'm taking a summer off, which is beautiful. The only thing I have to worry about in the summer is all the pre-camps for a drumline. So it's the most free time I have had since I was in high school, and it is amazing. And I am just drawing comics every day, and and my drawings were all shit. They were just terrible. But it's in hindsight, they were terrible at the time. It's the best I'd ever done. And what gave me a real thrill was that I was drawing from photo reference every day. So I was learning. It's like, you see right. that hand? I could have never drawn that hand before. Look at that hand. And so like when I look at a lot of artists look at their old work and like, I'm so terrible. And then they get really down on themselves. No, don't do that. Don't be that guy. When you look at your old stuff, think that was a different person. That was who I was. And who I was really did a good job. It's like I look at the drawings that I think I look at now and I'm just laughing because they look so terrible, but I can still point to all the thesis like I was so happy about this thing, or it's like this little piece here that looks the absolute worst and ruins the page, that was an experiment. I tried something new there,
right.
And this failure brought me closer to being good. And so it was a wonderful summer. My wife is pregnant. I get a message in my inbox that says classes start up in 10 days, and I'm just banging my head against the wall. Baby, I don't want to go back to school. I don't want to go back to school. I'm not really learning that much. I've learned a lot already. I'm not learning that much anymore. And all of my classmates are freaking 19-year-old. And like the age difference is something like 3 years, but it's 3 years in a time period where that actually matters, A.
Right.
And B, it's a bunch of 20-year-old kids who are 20-year-old kids. I'm 24, which isn't that far away, but I'm 24, I'm married, and I've got a kid on the way.
Sure.
So that puts me far away.
Sure.
It's like,
and they all want you to buy them beer.
Man, and I'm not a beer drinker, so I disappointed a lot of people. Like, between being openly contemptuous, just between, it's like, oh, look at that. You're having 20-year-old pro. Oh, you showed up to class and you're so hungover. Oh, I feel so sorry for you. Shut the fuck up. It's like, oh, I didn't really get to finish my project. Why the fuck not? You know about this for... I was everybody's dad. I was like, you know about this project for weeks. What is your excuse? Shut up. I was that guy. So I was just bitter, and I was upset, and I was isolated, and I hate, baby, I don't want to go back to school. She's like, don't, quit school, be a stay-at-home dad, we've got a kid on the way, this was the plan all along. Just take the next, it was 8 months before Ivy was due, just like, take the next 8 months and just make comics. We're fine. I'm bringing home all the bacon we need. We're in good shape. Just make comics. So I quit school, and I spent the next several months, the next 2 years, just making comics, starting up a web comic, journal comics, all autobiographical stuff. Which I look at that as my grad school,
right?
Because it was during that period that I was trying to get clients, very rightfully so, not getting any,
right?
And then like getting some of the breaking in token jobs as my drawings got better and as my design got better. And something that I tell people when I say don't go to art school, take art classes. And if you want to get better at something, just do it. Don't take classes about it. You know, learn stuff. Don't spend too much money, but actually do it.
Right.
Because I learned a lot from Kate and from Gunner in design school. So much that I really needed. But in the 2 months after I had quit art school, I did more graphic design in those 2 months than I had the previous 2 years combined. And it was all shit. It was all terrible. And I didn't have any peers around to show it to get feedback from, which is a double-edged sword, because what it meant was, I have to learn on my own, which that's a great habit to build because you can't always count on other people to help you out.
Right.
And B, what that means is, like, it's all shit, but I was, it's shit mostly because I was floundering to find what my voice was visually. And just, there's no shortcut. You just have to make bad, bad art for a long time.
Sometimes
on your own.
Sometimes you just gotta get it out. Yeah,
just make the bad art all on your own and get the victories from, I tried this new thing, and I tried that new thing, and this got better.
There's always something you can learn from every drawing that you do.
Exactly.
Even if it is, don't do this again, and now know.
The lessons that are like, don't do this again, now you know, they're so painful when you draw that thing and it's so awful. But those are the best lessons in the world.
Sure.
Because then it's like, this is positive. Never do this again.
Right.
So after school, I'm making comics. I'm putting up a webcomic. I put up a new comic page or two pages at a time. I got up to 3 days a week. My daughter was born. I'm stay-at-home dadding, losing a lot of sleep, keeping the webcomic going. And I kept the webcomic up for 2 years, and then I burnt out for a couple of reasons. It was a journal comic, which, for those of you who don't know, it's just you sit there and think, what's something that happened to me recently that's worth documenting in a comic? And for me, it's like, what's the funniest thing that happened yesterday? And every single journal comic is awful. Just every single one. And like, I'm a fan. I read them. I still buy them.
Sure.
But it is the lowest form of comic art in the world.
Well, it's a mixture of, you know, you're trying to do a lot of things. You're trying to be a writer. You're trying to be an illustrator. And you're also kind of sort of trying to be a stand-up comedian.
Exactly. Exactly. The reason most artists do the journal comic is because the writing is taken care of.
Right.
It's like the thing has already happened. I just need to translate that into pictures and pacing.
Sure.
And like I say, I look at that as my grad school because it's all, like, previous to that, I wanted to draw monsters and I wanted to draw superheroes and spaceships. And the journal comic forced me to sit down and be like, no, you're going to draw what it looks like to sit in a chair and be bored. You're going to draw the exterior of a Best Buy and you're going to think of a better name than Best Buy.
Right.
Perfect to purchase. Get good at drawing the mundane things and then find a way for the mundane things to be fun.
Right.
Not just for you to draw, but for other people to look at. Freelancing-wise, I've discovered three tiers into being a professional freelancer. The first job you take is pro bono, which is a really, really nice way of saying for free.
Yep.
And then the second tier is token money. They paid you money because they can't actually afford anything. They pay you a tenth of what the work they need is. But it's just to say that they paid you.
Exactly.
And it's an important stepping stone. So
sure.
there's the free, there's the token money, there's the semi-pro money, which is you're getting like half your hourly rate. And then there's pro money, which is where you're getting the proper hourly rate that if you could do that 8 hours, 10 hours a day, you can live at least off of ramen.
Sure.
And I've only last year did I get the professional rate. I started. Awesome. I did the token money stuff for both graphic design and some illustration. But also during that time, I was compiling all of my stuff into mini comics. I was learning how to screen print so I could screen print the covers, which was such a pain in the ass. Oh man,
you can imagine
exposing in the sun, washing out in a bathtub, and printing on my kitchen table.
It's got to be an easier way.
I felt like
easier ways cost more money.
I know. I felt like I was in an infomercial every step. It's like, oh, there's got to be a better way.
Thanks, Obama.
No, see, Obama wasn't president. Wait, yeah, he was. That was his first term. Yeah, thanks, Obama. And like my wife is like, yeah, there is an easier way. It's called the print shop down the street. And I'm like, yeah, it's also called $80 setup fee, so no.
Right.
I was printing out many comics. I was going to a couple of local comic conventions, and you know, with each passing couple of months, I'd have a new mini comic. With each year, I'd have a new book. Like my first graphic novel is just the first year of Journal Comics.
Right.
The climax is when my daughter is born. It's just the year that my daughter was born. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Spoiler alert! I have a daughter. She's 4 years old. She's super cute, and you wish that she was your daughter. She is wicked cool. And the second graphic novel is just the second year of Journal Comics.
So when do you switch gears? Because you go from Journal Comics, and needless to say, Purgatory Pub is not necessarily.
Yeah, what what happened was is I was square peg trying to fit into a round hole. I thought web comics were the way.
Right.
And they're not for everyone. And in fact, they're not for almost anyone. I joined a professional website. It's a pay website. You have to buy a subscription. And they give you straight dope on all the economic stuff, all the business stuff. Like weird, esoteric, important things that only webcomic guys need to know. Like when does ad revenue come in? Which ad guys are the best ones to go with? Stuff like that.
Right.
Where do you go to get your books printed? Who's going to give you... Like, being a member of this group means you get a professional's discount and that sort of thing. And somebody did a study, and they said, you're more likely to win $1 million in the lottery than you are to make even semi-pro money being a webcomic artist. In fact, you're 100 times more likely to win $1 million in the lottery than you are to make even semi-pro money in webcomics.
Right.
And part of that is the nature of it is that webcomics are the... When they first started, 98, 99, and 2000, mm-hmm. there was an explosion of guys who had been wanting to make comic books for ages. They put all of their stuff on the internet, but that stuff takes time. That stuff takes a lot of time.
Build a following.
Yeah, and the,
things like Facebook and maybe MySpace was in its infancy. Like,
yeah, MySpace.
How do you spread the word?
Exactly, and it was all word of mouth. And the trick is, like, you can get people to come to your website, and the people who were on the internet at the time were hungry for this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the long form stuff takes time, and you need them to build at the time. There's no RSS, so you need to build the habit of them coming to your website and have them put you in a bookmark. And the what we call webcomics now really took off because they had something out every day. And the reason they could do it is because it's all short chunks. One of the hardest pills to swallow is that careers in the art business are not based on excellence. They're not based on who's good. It's based on who's good enough.
Right.
Webcomics are very much based on this strip is good enough because I have to do another one tomorrow. And the trick is, I'm not that guy. I don't want to make... And they're emulating newspaper comic strips, and then you make a collection of the strips. And, I mean, it's perfectly legitimate. More so than legitimate, I think, like, Bill Watterson, who made Calvin and Hobbes. People are really, really into that guy now.
Yeah.
Like just now starting to understand exactly how good he was. And I tell you, man, it's he still doesn't get enough credit. He's one of the greatest artists of the late 20th century. I can point out books and point to all the stuff he did.
He helped revolutionize, if anything, like the Sunday funnies and what they could be. And it doesn't have to be tongue-in-cheek, you know, PG humor.
Yeah,
There could be depth to it. There could be psychology to it.
Yeah, there's lots of funny moments. There's some poignant moments. Calvin's, like, one of the most poignant things I ever read in my life was a Calvin and Hobbes strip. Calvin says to, and it's one of those where they're walking through the woods, not doing anything.
Right.
Calvin says, Hobbes, if you could wish for anything at all, what would it be? Hobbes thinks about it. He says, I would wish for a tuna sandwich. Calvin loses his mind. A tuna, anything in the world. You could wish to be the ruler of the world. You could wish for the invisible jet. You could wish for rocket power to anything. You want a tuna sandwich, you moron. And in the very last panel, they're in Calvin's kitchen eating a tuna sandwich. And Hobbes pokes him and says, I got my wish. And I was like, this is such a beautiful lesson about achievable goals and understanding. Right. It's like, what do you actually want? It's like, what I actually want is a tuna sandwich. Like, just, it's one of those, the simple things are best. It's like, it's very, very complex thing to learn from. So anyway, like that format, the comic strip format is perfectly legitimate, but that's not the guy that I am. When I go to read comics, what I do is I go to the shop and I'm like, where are the graphic novels? Where's the thing that has a beginning, a middle, and an end? Where's the story? Spider-Man is my favorite superhero ever. He does not do it for me anymore. He did in high school because in so many ways I was that guy. It's like, 16-year-old, my height, my build, brown hair, brown eyes, nerd, poorer than everyone else around him, but they can't really tell. Yeah, this kind of speaks to me. It's like, has this dark secret. My dark secret was I played drums in metal bands. Wasn't much of a secret because I was like, hey, my band is playing. Do y'all want to come and see it? And of course, no, because, you know, only the weirdos like me in high school liked metal bands. So what happened was I got way bored with journal comics. It's just, I'm so done with this. And all through college, I was writing stories that I would just pull out of the air. Some of them were terrible and I was meeting a deadline, and some of them were really, really good. Like, I've gone back and read some of my short stories and I think, it's amazing. This story really holds up. I did something really good here. And it's strange to read these things like 5 years later and 10 years later, because I'm a completely different guy now, and I'm like, this is still good. And the second thing that happened was I would wake up in the morning, take care of my daughter, put her down for a nap, draw. Gets up from her nap, play, put her down for nap number two. She was 6 months, she took two naps, draw some more. Wake her up, cook dinner, Megan comes home, we eat dinner, Ivy goes to bed, Megan goes to bed, and draw until 2 a.m. Finish, post it, go to sleep, wake up, sit down at the drawing board and think, okay, what's something funny that happened yesterday that I can turn into a comic today? Absolutely nothing. Nothing happened yesterday. I was at my drawing board all day.
Right.
Yeah, the routine part isn't a problem. The problem is just like life is the support system for art, not the other way around, right? Mm-hmm. And something that I heard but didn't really fully believe was if you want to make good art, you need to live some life. You need to get out the door. And that's why, like, a lot of people don't understand this, but like, or don't know this, but some of the best novelists ever kept their day job their whole life, like mundane day jobs. Like, I can't remember his name, but there's some British author who was a mailman and he kept his job until the day he died. And people would ask him, like, his novels were popular. He was making money, and people would ask him why. And he's like, because art comes from life, and life happens when you get up in the morning and you go to work.
Right.
A lot of my stories happen because I'm on the bus and I see somebody and I think that guy looks really interesting, and I can project a story onto somebody that I see, or I'm delivering mail to the same people day in and day out for years and years and years, and I can see the story of their lives unfolding in those little snippets. Like, and so that was just kind of the revelation at the time. It's like, I've got no life to write about anymore. And I'm bored by writing. Like, I've bored myself. I wake up, I take care of my daughter, and then that's done. And some days it's very thrilling because she's still a baby, or she was at the time.
Right.
And it's thrilling only for me and for a handful of people that are in my immediate family. Because, look, Ivy said something super funny. She's just now getting language. This is amazing. And everyone else in the world, unless they've had a kid or unless they're expecting one soon, really couldn't give crap. Just why do I care? And me personally, it's like, I read journal comics, but not that much. Like, even as I read them, even as I make them, I'm like, this is just the lowest form of comic art in the world.
So
I got
you moved
bored
towards from that.
Yeah,
but you found bigger than life concepts.
Kind of
theology and
the first comic that I made that was like a short story was actually not a bigger concept. It was a slice of life story. I read the biography of Jack Kirby. For those of you who don't know, he made Captain America, he made Thor, he made the Hulk, he made the Fantastic Four, he made
New Gods.
The New Gods in DC. He's on top of all of those things, he's also a World War II veteran. He was in Patton's Army, he was in the Battle of the Bulge.
You got that book too, don't you? Yeah, Tales of Amazement.
I didn't get the book. I read it in Barnes & Noble and didn't buy it because I couldn't afford it. Couldn't afford it because I make freaking comics. I read his biography and I was just like, this is amazing. Jack Kirby is a great American hero. Sure. He's this super patriotic guy, and it was this beautiful, beautiful paradox because it turns out he's deeply religious. Religious Jewish man, and his wife said, you know, you don't really go to temple. We've been married for years. You've never gone to temple. Like, you insist I take the kids, but you've never gone.
Right.
Why not? He's like, every time I sit at my drawing table, I'm going to temple. Because he's writing, for what were at the time, very complex stories about heroic figures. And the thing that made them heroic was self-sacrifice.
Sure.
Like, the thing in the original Fantastic Four resented all of the rest of the characters. It's like, we all went through the same thing. I came out ugly. I can't leave our compound. But when there's a supervillain, all of you are worthless and you need me. And then as soon as you don't need me, I go back into my basement again. And just, you know, it's very, very complex, but the thing will constantly come back and do it because he understands if he doesn't, it'll hurt so many more people.
Right.
And just every hero he made, it's just variations on that theme. And Jack Kirby himself was that kind of guy. And he got shafted so hard business-wise, so hard. And for those of you who don't know, think the Avengers movie, he made all of those characters. But he's not on the books in the official byline because of the way business was done in the 60s.
Right.
$200 billion, something, no, that's ridiculous. But just some huge, ridiculous amount of money that movie alone made. And were he alive today, he wouldn't see a dime of it.
Right.
Just bad deal after bad deal that he signed, or just there was no contract, and so Marvel could make up whatever they want. So I wrote down a story where very, very thinly veiled all of the major players from the 40s and 50s, where all of this began, and I wrote a happy ending for Jack Kirby. It's like, here's just a short story that's kind of like a metaphor for here's what happened to the guy, and then here's a fake character I made up that gives him a happy ending.
Right.
And I'm very, that's to this day, like, that is the book where I made a mini comic. It's 48 pages, I think. And that's the moment where I'm like, I found my stride. This is my voice. This is my style. This is exactly the kind of story I should be making. And so proud of that book. That was the thing that started me on. It's like, okay, the time has come to put Journal Comics away. Just, I'm done. Mm-hmm. I can actually write, and I've got my voice. Writing-wise, I know what my voice is. I should just do that. And the instant I decided that, I didn't make a comic. I made a kid's book. Yay, kid's book. For the first one I took, I had a poetry class, and I had a couple poetry classes. I pulled out all the old poems, and I picked the three that were the best, and I made a kid's book out of them. Because,
very cool.
Yeah. And my favorite part is, like, these are very much my voice, because these three poems were written by a guy in his 20s for other people in their 20s. And I illustrate them, and I took them into a classroom of 8-year-olds, and they ate it right up. And I take it to a class of 5th graders, and they eat it right up. And I can tell both of these classes, this wasn't written for you. This is written for people my age. And they're all like, yeah, we're cool. We're in on something for adults. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. That, I mean, that had to give you a feeling of self-worth that, you know, even praise from your own peers, to me, doesn't hold as much weight as sometimes, like, just having an impact on a kid.
Yeah. Kid will tell you when you suck.
Oh yeah.
And worst of all, like, if a kid says, dude, you suck, be like, well, I now know that I must work harder or something. Or, right. You know, it's like, you know what, kid, maybe you just don't get me. But when the kid sighs and looks around the room to find anything else to take his attention or her attention, then's when you know you've missed the mark.
Right.
Nope. It's like, it was, I used to be, like, in middle school and part of high school, I was really into theater, and so just, you can kind of gauge an audience, and when I was in a classroom reading my stories, I'm like, I've got these kids, I got them in the palm of my hand. If these were adults with money in their pocket, I could make them buy every book I've got. I need to find a way to get their parents in the room.
That's when the sales rep comes out.
I went looking for a sales rep for that specific need. I found a couple people who were like, wow, you just made something up and now it's a book? That's amazing. Yeah, I could totally sell this. And then I never hear back from these people.
Well, you gotta, unfortunately, do it yourself. And that's kind of part of the drawback to self-publication.
Also, I met those people on Craigslist. So.
Oh, well. Yeah. Rule number one. Oh. When it comes to professional business practices, Craigslist is not usually the best place to go.
This is how and why I learned that lesson. Yeah. You are correct. And I am the dopey dipshit who didn't learn it in the first place.
You know what people love to give for work rendered.
Oh, I know exactly what they like to give. They like to give a portfolio piece and experience and exposure.
Oh.
But not the kind you get arrested for.
And once the thing goes big, you're going to get that credit,
you're
get
so much money on the back end.
Whoa. Just the credit.
Oh, see, in the comics world, they promise you money on the back end. When this thing gets optioned for a movie, you're going to be swimming in money.
Action figure series?
Yeah.
Lucas got the merchandising rights. I'm giving you a fortune. A hypothetical fortune.
The story that I've written is going to go so big.
Yeah.
Oh, man. In the comics community, there's so many freaking reason writers.
That posting is only two clicks away from, like, some of the most debauchable... disgusting things the internet has to offer, but what are you gonna do? I know a lot of people listening may be interested in creating their own comics, or even really just creating their own stories. People are drawn to comics from a writing point of view, from an artist point of view, and from a reading point of view. So I guess my question is, so you want to make a comic. Yeah. Or, so you want to make a book.
Okay.
Where do you begin?
You must have a story first. You must have the content. A lot of people say, I want to make a book. Let me look up some printers. I was that guy. Don't do it. Actually have the story. There's no way around it at all. If you're an artist and you don't write at all, first of all, writing isn't that hard. Like, writing is, if you're literate, you can do it. Done. If you suck at dialogue, cool, you don't have to write dialogue. If you suck at descriptions and whatnot, cool, you don't have to write that. You can play to your strengths. Writing is easy. You just need to sit down and do the work. It's not that hard. Almost everybody, particularly artists, have a really cool story idea in their head. Like, for instance, George Lucas is the perfect example. Star Wars is a beautiful trilogy. There's only 3 Star Wars movies, just throwing that out there.
I'm currently wearing a Millennium Falcon shirt. It may have gotten in his head. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Corelli stock YT-1300. Hell yes, sir. Way better than the YT-2400. Things
the Outrider?
A piece of shit.
Is that the Outrider?
Yeah, it's the Outrider.
The Outrider's pretty cool.
Yeah. The Outrider is supposed to be the cheaper, much more high-performance version.
Well, that would explain why Dash Rendar could afford that.
Yep. And also why it broke down way less.
Yep. So materials.
Okay, hold on. Gotta have the George Lucas said, what would it be like if there were samurais in space?
Right.
And also he wanted to throw in mysticism, because what he wants to do is he wants to make the hero's journey. And that's a brilliant story. Just how the hero's journey, for those of you who don't know, it's just how does a boy become a man without any parental guidance. Just how does an orphan become a functioning adult? Not only a functioning adult, but a potent, powerful, good, moral person without the guidance of their parents.
Right.
That's the hero's journey. And then there's a lot of tropes along the way. There's the old crone or the wise man, which in Star Wars is Obi-Wan Kenobi. And so George Lucas has this idea, and he's got a great eye for aesthetics. George Lucas is essentially a comic artist who can't write. Because if you'll remember, the times that he did write dialogue, we got the prequels. And the times where he didn't write dialogue, he's like, I'm going to hire somebody else to do the dialogue bits. You know, we get Star Wars, and he plays to his strengths. And it's this beautiful, wonderful story. And he played to his strengths, so it became this huge phenomenon. So you don't have to be the best writer in the world. You just have to have a story, and you have to be willing to do the work.
I think that's that right there is the biggest part of it. And I know, like, even I, well, you know, I work 9 to 5, so it's really hard to do that last part. But doing the work, that sounds a lot easier than it really is.
Yeah.
So this also leads into my next question on mental preparation to do the work.
Yeah.
And then just because you're ready on Monday and you're going on Tuesday, what happens when you hit that wall come Thursday? How do you keep yourself motivated?
I'm going to tell you two things that seem like they have no relation, and they're going to come around in the end. If you want to lose weight, you have to go hungry. That's it.
Right.
That's the whole secret. I'm not exactly thin or svelte right now, but I'm when I graduated college, I was 20 pounds more than this. And I went on a diet, and I'm like, man, I am hungry, but I'm on this diet. Wait, does that mean I'm just supposed to go hungry? Yes, that's exactly what that means. Go hungry.
Yep.
Because the end of the day is, do you want it or not? And don't lie to yourself. If you want it, you'll do it. If you don't, you won't. So if you say, I want to do the stuff, but I can't because time, because this, because that, it's like, no. No, doesn't matter what the becauses are. And it does not matter what the becauses are. If you want to do it, you will do it. When I was taking writing classes, every professor said, writers write. If you don't write, you're not a writer. If your story cannot be read by somebody other than you, you're not a writer.
Right.
Stop lying to yourself, because it's hurting you more than it hurts anyone else. And for the record, it hurts me a whole lot when somebody calls themselves a writer. I'm like, really? Cool. Where can I find your stuff? Oh, nowhere. Oh, it's all in your head. Oh, you lied to me. Thanks. The second thing is, I read this beautiful article by somebody who trains Navy SEALs. And he says, when I've got a group of dudes in front of me and I tell them to go into freezing California water, the guys who say, I'm a super great swimmer or I used to surf in these waters, they're going to wash out. The guy who's not a strong swimmer, who's from like Utah or some landlocked state, and who's already shivering just looking at the water, he's going to make it. When I tell somebody to do 100 pull-ups, the guy who's built like Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to wash out. But the guy who can't even finish one, he's going to make it. Because the trick is, the people who see themselves as super capable and achievers, the point of the drill instructor is to push them to the point that they've never been pushed before. So it doesn't matter that they can do 1,000 pull-ups or 1,000 whatever. The drill instructor is going to force them to do 1,001 to make them uncomfortable. And those people have never been uncomfortable in their lives. Kind of like if you put the bully next to the nerd who's been bullied, the nerd is going to make it through the program and the bully's not, because the bully's never been put in that uncomfortable position before, but the nerd has been in that position his whole life.
Sure.
So super weak guy who's being told to do something out of his comfort zone, he's been doing that his whole life already. He'll make it. He's got the stuff to do what it takes. And the reason people wash out of programs like Green Berets, SEALs, Rangers, is not, most of it is not because of physically they can't do it. Something in the neighborhood of 70%, 75%, based on this documentary I saw a while ago, something in that percentile, those people are physically capable, they can do it, they just have to force themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that the amount of people on the other end is so much smaller is because the ones who wash out, who are physically capable, were not mentally prepared for the crap that they would have to go through. So that, if you're going to sit down, if you're going to make a comic, comics are incredibly work intensive. It doesn't matter if your art is just stick figures and writing in Sharpie.
Right.
It is crazy work intensive. It's going to be hard. If you're not mentally prepared for the amount of suck that you're going to have to go through, you're going to wash out. How do you stay motivated? Do you want it or not?
Right.
Do you want to be the guy that says, I make comics? Or do you want to be the guy that says, yeah, I used to draw? I go to conventions all the time. I'm spending $300 to be there, to be on my side of the table selling the stuff that I made. And there's an army of people who come to these conventions just to come to tables like mine and say, I used to draw, because they want to feel like they're still a part of this group. They want to lie to themselves and say, I'm still one of you. And I'm like, no, you're not one of me. You have no body of work to show, and you did not put your money where your mouth is to get on my side of the table.
Right.
You either want it or you don't. Don't lie to yourself. If you don't want it, that's fine. It's okay to know that about yourself, and it's okay to make that decision, because there's other stuff that you do. But if you find yourself hitting the slog, you either want it or you don't. When somebody says, I don't have time, I was taking the maximum hours in college, and I was taking them in writing intensive classes, and I was taking them in art classes, which means for every 3 credit hours, is 9 hours uncredited when you're still in class, not to mention the homework. I was taking the maximum hours. I was working 3 jobs, and I had to put time into my marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the most busy I've ever been in my life, far busier than, and like, I'm a father now. It's far busier than I am now. And that's when I started making comics. It doesn't have to be a lot. It just has to be regular. I could only finish 1 black and white page a week. But I was doing it.
Right.
So a lot of people say, I don't have the time, or when I get home from work, I'm just so drained. Suck it up. That is the only advice. Suck it up. Look in the mirror. Do you want it or not? And if the answer is no, that's okay. Just don't lie to yourself.
Right. And don't hurt your hand trying to force it.
Oh, yeah. For God's sake, take breaks. Take frequent breaks. Oh, my word.
So I know with your books, crowdfunding was a big help.
Yeah.
And social media and all that. What are some tips that you could give to help other people utilize things like Kickstarter and Facebook and Twitter and all that?
Yeah. Believe it or not, social media didn't play a huge role. I'm not able to crack the social media code because I've got my head. I'm here at home. I'm either taking care of my daughter or I'm drawing alone in a room. So I'm not tweeting very often,
right?
And I'm not on Facebook that often. For if you're gonna do crowdfunding, you have to have a tribe. You have to have a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just put your stuff up on Kickstarter and think people are trolling Kickstarter looking for things. They'll find me. Like, a couple people will, but you need to have a crowd there first. I only kickstarted my latest graphic novel, Purgatory Pub, and I put out 2 graphic novels, a bunch of mini comics, and 2 kids' books before then, and I did those on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And to get them printed, I went through a print-on-demand service, Amazon's print-on-demand service called CreateSpace.
Yes.
Good service, prices are good, customer service is great. The printing actually happens in Columbia, South Carolina, so I get my books wicked quick.
Right.
And I never want to use them again. Ever, ever, ever. I have nothing but good things to say, but it's like I've reached the point where if I can't print 1,000 books at a time, if I can't say that I've grown to that point, it's time to pack it in.
Sure.
And what happened was I made the first book all on my own. And then for the next books, I did pre-orders. It's like I need just 100 books to have in my house to take to conventions. So I need something like 40 people to pre-order. And between friends and family and the small readership I had from the webcomic, I got that.
Mm-hmm.
And then what else happened is when you go to conventions, what I used to do is a horrible mistake. My advice to everybody, I went because I wanted to meet the right people. I went to network in big letters. I went to connect with people in huge letters.
Right.
Make connections. And that is wrong. That is false. Eric Estrada is one of the few people making comics for a living, and he said networking. Networking is just talking to dudes. That's it.
Yep.
I would go to a convention, then I'd hit the hotel bar because that's where networking happens. And I tried to network with people, and I failed because I am a nobody who is trying to find people to use, basically.
Right.
And I didn't want to believe that about myself, so I didn't fess up at the time. And I failed miserably, so I just go to the bar, order a Jack and Coke, and there's a dude sitting next to me. I'm like, hey man, my name's Gabe. You're here for the con? Cool. Where's your table? And stopped networking and started making friends. And I went to conventions for something like 3 or 4 years. And on every convention, I broke even on the hotel and the table cost, and had to eat the travel cost.
Sure.
But because I went to conventions and because I made friends, like actually found people who I really liked, and became Facebook friends with those people, just not because I'm on Facebook all the time, but just if I want to get in touch, I can.
Sure.
So because I made friends when I said, hey, I'm coming out with a book, the handful of fans I got from the webcomic and all of the comic friends that I had could see it and could signal boost me and could fund me. I knew that after 4 years of hitting conventions, I had made enough friends to where I said, I'm only asking for $3,500 to print 1,000 books from the cheapest printer I can find, Kness Printing. They're located in Pennsylvania. I think Reading, Pennsylvania. They're fantastic. And they're cheaper than China, which is ridiculous. And unlike every other American printer and every other Canadian printer, they'll actually return your calls. They'll send you an email back. After 4 years of hitting cons, I knew that I had enough people to reach my goal.
Right.
And the way something that kind of made me sad about pre-orders to begin with is like you offer multiple tiers of stuff. Like for $10 you get the book, but for $20 I'll sign it or something like that.
Sure.
I thought I need 40 people to pre-order the book, and then only 20 people would show up. And that's like, oh man, I thought I could get at least 40 people to pre-order my book. But those 20 people bought the premium stuff. They wanted all the extras.
Sure.
And I thought that, you know, I have a very small audience, which is sad, but this particular audience just really likes me, which is lovely. And what I found out is like, no, that's how it all works. That's how all funding works. The small audience that loves you is where your capital comes from.
Right.
So for crowdfunding, you have to have the crowd before you go in. And then the second thing is you have to understand your crowdfunding platform. For most people, that means Kickstarter. There's lots of information out there, lots of statistical things about how long your commercial needs to be. Has to be a video, cannot put up an image and a pitch, cannot, do not do it. Doesn't matter how great you are and how big your crowd is, put up a video. How long your campaign should be, 30 days or less. Most beginners think, I'll say 60 days because it gives me the most time. Nope. You will, oh man, your crowd will hate you for that shit because that is 60 days of you pushing your stuff. And what happens is usually for most people, they get huge influx in the beginning, and then there's a lull in the middle, and then a huge influx at the end. And so if you get a 60-day campaign, it's kind of a big influx in the middle, and then a long dead space of just nothing. And you're pulling out your hair and cursing the gods, and you hate everybody. And then you just barely pull it out at the end. So 30 days or less. For my campaign, it was 20 days. And at the end of those 20 days, I was about to die. the second thing is when you're crowdfunding, and this is another beautiful revelation that I had just this past year. Crowdfunding is the exact same as running a political campaign. It's called a campaign for a reason.
Right.
And by extension, marketing and sales are running a political campaign. You are getting voters, basically. You are finding people to believe in you and to believe in the thing that you're making. So when you're making your thing that's going to be crowdfunded, you'd better believe in you. You'd better believe in the thing that you're making. I listen to lots of books on tape because that's what you do when you draw all day.
Yep.
And
I listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Me too. I love business podcasts. Can only take so many of them at a time.
Yeah.
The other thing I listen to is Dialogue Heavy TV. When I was working on my first fiction mini-comic, it's called Off-Panel Hero.
Mm-hmm.
When I was working on Off-Panel Hero, I was inking in a marathon session. I sat through both the first and second seasons of Archer in one sitting.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. I forget the thing I was talking about.
Crowdfunding.
I listened to a book on sales and sales technique. And he says, item number one, if you want to be a salesman, you need to like sales. And if you don't...
you need to hire someone who likes
sales. You need to hire somebody who does.
Yeah.
The second thing, and for if you're putting out your own work and you don't like sales, join the club and then suck it up. Because the next question is, do you want it or not?
Right.
The words suck it up have been a lesson for almost everything. Like, I'm sitting down drawing something that's very perspective heavy, and it's so hard and it's taking hours. And I thought, I'm doing this wrong. No professional with big capital letters struggles this hard.
Right.
And then I talked to a bunch of them that I really looked up to, and they're like, oh man, it takes me hours. It takes forever. And I said, so what's the trick? He said, oh, the trick is make sure you know where your vanishing point is and then suck it up. It's supposed to be hard.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that it's hard is not on you. It's going to be hard. So if you don't like sales, suck it up. But the thing that you cannot live without, you must believe in the product that you're selling. You have to. Right. And you have to believe in it 100%. The way that if you're going to get off your ass and go into a booth and vote for a candidate, you need to believe. So the only way people are going to open up their wallet for the thing that you're doing, sales-wise and for crowdfunding, they have to believe, and they will not. They will not believe in your thing unless you do. And you cannot come to an audience with, hey, I made this thing. It's kind of fun. I think you might like it too. Vote for me. No. You'll get some votes. You will not get enough. You have to believe. You have to say, this is important to me. And I think, I really, really think that you'll like it. And if the project you're working on is not that important to you, then cool, find something else to do with it. Don't crowdfund it. Don't ask other people to believe in you if it's just something you're kind of doing for fun.
So where would you direct people to find more of your stuff?
Firelightsmedia.com, firelights, plural, media.com.
Pure. Plural, not possessive.
Yes, not possessive. There is no. I have no apostrophes in my URL. That is, that would be death. I've got it's a blog / I've got 3 episodes of a podcast on there. You can look at my portfolio. I have not updated in a while because I've been busy working on other things. And the other place is purgatorypub.net. That's where you can find out about the new book. And this, like, the huge revelation for me, like, when I stopped Journal Comics, is the day that I said, I don't really believe in this. This is okay. This is a huge, wonderful learning experience. I don't regret an ounce of this. But Off-Panel Hero and my kids' books and the thing that I'm working on right now, I believe in these things. Particularly the thing I'm working on right now. It's like, this is really important to me. So if you want to learn more about the thing that's important to me, purgatorypub.net. You can find all the, you know, you can click around, find more stuff about me from there. You can find where to read the first 2 chapters for free in a PDF. You can get the ebook from there. You can buy the regular book from Amazon. You can find links to the rest of my stuff. So that.
And you could probably pick it up in upcoming conventions.
Oh yeah. The next convention I'm hitting is Animazement in Raleigh. This is gonna be weird.
Yeah,
it's an anime. I've attended this con twice many years ago. I'm not an anime guy. Like, I like it okay. Sure. I like some of it, but it's juried. It's like, it's in Raleigh.
Yeah,
it's in Raleigh. I'd be an idiot for not at least trying. And I hear that late, like for you and me when we were in middle school and high school, if you were an anime kid, you just hated all Western things with a passion. Yeah. And apparently, kids today are not like that. Some of my colleagues have said, I went to an anime show. I made bank.
Really?
Yeah, but the thing that they were buying were commissions. It's like, sure, you know, they buy the book, okay, but they're like, oh, you can draw this.
Yeah.
And it's a juried show, so I said, here's my comic, if you think your audience will like it. And they're like, oh yeah, yeah, come on. So, Animazement in Raleigh, and then after that, Heroes Con in Charlotte. It's one of the biggest comic conventions in the country. It's one of the longest running, 30 years.
Speaking of Heroes Con, me and either the Damn Art Major Boys or me and somebody, we're going to probably try to do either a live from Heroes Con or maybe a post Heroes Con episode. So we have that to look forward to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're discussing. There could be things happening with that. But I know a couple of the people I'm involved with are interested in pursuing that. So
I'll be splitting a table with a friend of mine named Max Miller Dowdell. I believe that's how you pronounce his last name. I'm sharing a table with him. He's got this beautiful hardcover, full color graphic novel It's webcomic and crowdfunded, and it's fantastic. He's actually a painter. He comes from the painting tradition.
Awesome.
And he decided to go, you know, line art and digital painting for his comic. It's beautiful. In the There's Always a Better Man story, I'm tabling next to the Better Man. It's like, oh, look at that. It's hardcover. Hey, it's full color.
You
it's beautiful.
Here's
my
that,
soft cover black and white.
When you say that, for every Jim Lee out there, there's an Alex Ross. And on that note, we're going to end it here. Hope you guys enjoyed it. You know, shout out us in, or give me a shout out in the comments and let me know what you think. And we'll catch you next time on the No Big Two Comic Review.
Good night.
Good night. Or afternoon.